Today in South Africa, President Nelson Mandela agreed to give apartheid-era human rights violators 5 more months to seek amnesty for their crimes. The deadline for applications had been tomorrow. The extension was requested by Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who heads South Africa's Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Tutu won the Nobel Peace Prize for his role in the anti-apartheid struggle, but as head of the Truth Commission, he's been tough on all sides, including Mandela's African National Congress. Tutu threatened to quit if ANC members refused to confess that they, too, had violated human rights while fighting white minority rule. Now the ANC is urging its members to apply for amnesty. So far, the most senior official who's agreed to do so is Defense Minister Joe Modise, a former commander in the ANC guerrilla army. But the Truth Commission's main focus is torture and murder carried out by the former apartheid regime. It has already won confessions from some security police and a former police chief. Today's amnesty extension might lead to confessions from more high-ranking former officials. NPR's Ann Cooper has our report, which contains some explicit descriptions of torture.
At Nuremberg, the truth was sought in court, in Argentina, behind closed doors. South Africa's Truth and Reconciliation Commission chose a different model, mixing theater and therapy to probe the past.
Mr. Kalusa, good afternoon. If you will just stand to take the oath, please.
At public hearings around the country, the victims of apartheid are placed at center stage, a box of tissues at their elbow and a volunteer nearby to offer comfort. Then, as they tell their stories, interpreters translate the details into several of South Africa's 11 official languages.
The electrocution continued for a long time. I was screaming all the time, and I realized that I was losing consciousness. They continued with the electrocution. Even in my genitals, they did this. They did all that they can do. Even through my anus, they did this. They electrocuted me through every hole that they could find in my body.
As they describe the atrocities committed by apartheid security forces, it is not at all uncommon for witnesses to collapse in grief.
Mr. Chairman, may I request the commission to adjourn maybe for a minute? I don't think the witnesses...
At times, even the irrepressible Desmond Tutu is overwhelmed. He'll stop proceedings for a prayer, a moment of silence, or the beloved national anthem, God Bless Africa.
Desmond Tutu broke down and cried on television, and nobody thought it was phony.
Journalist Max Dupree has spent much of his professional career investigating the death squads and torture techniques of the former apartheid regime.
And people in their millions at home in front of the television set started crying with Desmond Tutu. And we have to cry together as a people, as a nation, because it brings healing.
Little of the Truth Commission testimony surprises Dupree. Indeed, details of apartheid's most notorious cases, like the bludgeoning death of Steve Biko at the hands of South African police, were reported long ago. Yet for victims and their families, Dupree says the Truth Commission offers, at long last, public legitimacy and personal catharsis.
Up to now, they've told their stories to newspapers, to journalists, to television teams, a lot of them foreign. And they've told it to their friends and so on. But for the first time, it's structured. It belongs to the nation. It's sanctioned by the government. It's sanctioned by our president. And it's now not your private little pain. It becomes a part of the greater whole.
Dealing with the 6,000 victims who have filed statements so far is only part of the Truth Commission's mandate. It also must weigh nearly 4,000 amnesty applications filed by the victims' tormentors. A few have been granted amnesty already, but most are still waiting. Amnesty seekers like Dirk Kutsia, who commanded a notorious secret security force of murderous, hard-drinking Afrikaners.
The burning of a body to ashes takes about 7 hours. It is, whilst that happened, we were drinking and even having a braai next to the fire.
at his amnesty hearing last month, Katsia chilled spectators with the callous details of the death of Sizwe Kandile. Kandile was a student and anti-apartheid activist whose body burned on a pyre of wood and tires while Katsia and his men had a barbecue nearby.
And the chunks of meat, especially the buttocks and the upper parts of the legs, had to be turned frequently during the night to make sure that everything burned to ashes. And the next morning, after raking through the rubble to make sure that there was no big pieces of meat or bone left at all, we departed and we all went our own way.
Before they surrendered power peacefully 2 years ago, South Africa's white politicians negotiated amnesty guarantees from the country's new rulers. Amnesty, meaning protection from civil and criminal prosecution, is granted case by case and it isn't automatic. But most applicants will qualify as long as they confess their crimes publicly, show they were motivated by the politics of apartheid, and that they committed their abuses between 1960 and 1993. Amnesty applicants are not required to apologize. And even when they do, as Dirk Katsia has for his grisly acts, families like Sizwe Kandile's do not always accept.
You have said that you would like one day to meet Mrs. Kandile and look her in the eye.
I would like to do that in future, yes, sir.
Mrs. Kandile asked me to convey to you that that is an honor that she feels you do not deserve, and that if you were really remorseful, you would have not applied for amnesty, but in fact stood trial for what you did with her son.
2 years ago, apartheid's victims and their families looked forward to the Truth Commission as a means of finally learning who gave the orders and what became of loved ones who disappeared. Once we know the truth, they said, we can forgive and reconcile with our former oppressors. But that was before the truth became so public, before people like Maria and Thule had to sit listening to white policemen seek amnesty for blowing up her 17-year-old son, Jeremiah.
That is not the way to kill an innocent child. You know, a child is not like a big person. A child is a child. They should have taken them to prison. It was something bad, instead of killing them.
Jeremiah Ntuli was one of 10 youths lured to their deaths in 1986 by an apartheid agent who pretended to represent the African National Congress. For 10 years after he disappeared, Maria Ntuli did not know her son's fate. When she finally learned it this year, she was unforgiving.
There must be justice. Yeah, must go to jail.
Truth Commission Chairman Desmond Tutu says he understands Maria Ntuli's demand for justice.
What would you do if you were a mother and you sat there and you heard that your son had been put into a minibus, plied with alcohol, and the minibus was then packed with explosives, and your son was blown to smithereens? You'd be, I think, an extraordinary, almost unnatural mother if your immediate reaction was, I'm going to forgive.
And yet, says Tutu, many survivors, perhaps Maria and Thule among them, will have to accept that their tormentors will walk free. Amnesty was the price for South Africa's peaceful transition to democracy. Those who want solace must seek it in the public telling of their harrowing stories.
Would you repeat after me? The story I'm about to tell is the truth and nothing else but the truth. So help me God.
The story I want to tell is the truth and nothing but the truth.
In an apartheid-era hospital outside the township of Kagiso, it is Amina Desai's turn to address the Truth Commission. Desai is an Indian woman, 76 years old, who spent 5 years in jail in the 1970s for the crime of lending her car to an anti-apartheid activist. The truth hurts, but silence kills, says a Truth Commission poster hanging nearby, as Desai recalls her frightening wait for interrogators in a police station office.
I heard a terrible commotion. I heard furniture, whatever it was, being pushed around. I heard people scampering around, and I heard screams. And I think
It was the day, the most terrible moment of my life, because at that particular instant, I felt as if my heart was actually jumping out of my chest.
When Desai finishes, she says she's not sure whether telling her story has helped her, though she hopes it can help others.
There will always be the historian who will want to know what motivated these people, what made them do certain things. In the years to come, somebody might learn from it.
What historians will learn will be only part of the truth. When the commission finishes its work a year from now and issues a final report, journalist Max Dupree estimates it will have uncovered no more than 20% of apartheid's worst crimes. Many perpetrators will never be identified. Links to high-ranking officials who gave orders to kill may never be made. And white South Africans who rarely attend the Truth Commission hearings may remain convinced that the whole process was just a witch hunt by the non-whites who now hold a democratic majority in South Africa. But for all its shortcomings, Desmond Tutu believes his commission will allow South Africa to learn from its past, move on to its future, and present a model to other states coping with the history of brutality.
It was special, I think, because God probably has a mission for us. God is saying, precisely because we are such an unlikely lot, I'm setting you up as an example for the rest of the world, that you can tell the world there was a nightmare, apartheid, it's ended, Bosnia, Northern Ireland, Somalia, Rwanda, Burundi. Your nightmare will end.
I'm Ann Cooper reporting.